What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Extreme Drummers Podcast, and we are on episode 7, I think. Yeah, I think that's right. I can't even remember which episode we're on. As always, massive thanks to everyone still listening, and special thanks to everyone who was involved in last week's episode, the Q&A thing. It was a bit different and a bit weird. But it was really good fun. Thank you so much for all the questions. And I'm really sorry that I couldn't get through all of them. But maybe I'll do another one of those in the future. But yeah, thank you. This is moving along nicely, all of this stuff. Yeah, pretty crazy that we're on episode 7. Yeah, so back to normal this week, thankfully. You don't just have to listen to my voice. You can listen to someone else's voice as well. And yeah, this week is really cool, really different. We've got Martin Jovanovic. If anyone doesn't know who Martin Jovanovic is, just Google him. He's kind of a force to be reckoned with. He's a teacher, an extreme metal drumming teacher and metal drumming teacher. And he's just a really insightful, knowledgeable guy. This episode is really, really cool. I thought it would be really awesome to get a completely different take on the whole extreme drumming thing, because obviously everybody I've spoken to so far is much like me, just a, you know, not just a performer, but, you know, a performer and kind of a traditional musician, I guess, in the sense, you know, play shows and play on albums and go in the studio and all that stuff. So I thought it'd be really interesting to get a different perspective on the extreme drumming thing. And this is, yeah, it's super, super interesting. He's a really smart, interesting guy with a lot of tips in here. There's a lot of really interesting stuff that you could take away from it. And obviously, being a teacher, he knows a lot more than most about the ins and outs and the details of this crazy drumming style that we do. But yeah, me and Martin we haven't known each other that long. We only really got in touch a year or so ago, a couple of years ago maybe, when I did a lesson for his the Drum Technique Academy, which is his main thing at the moment. But yeah, just a super cool dude, super interesting, super nice, super chilled. And it's just a really cool chat. And I hope you guys take some stuff away from it, because I definitely did. It was very inspiring. So, if you want more information on Martin and all of his stuff, he's got a lot of really, 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 really cool stuff out in the world, educational stuff. So, yeah, I'll put all the information in the show notes so that you can check out more stuff. But otherwise, yeah, I really hope you enjoy it. And thanks again to everybody for still listening. And as always, the normal platforms you can check it out are Instagram at Extreme Drummers Podcast, extremedrummerspodcast.com. My Instagram is at DanWildingDrum, or my Facebook is facebook.com/DanWildingDrum. And also YouTube, just search Extreme Drummers Podcast. But yeah, that's it pretty much for this week. I really hope you enjoy. Thank you again to everybody. And yeah, here we go. Episode 7. Martin Jovanovic, Extreme Drummers Podcast. So yeah, how are you, man? How's life, considering all this crazy madness?
Yeah. Actually, you know, life is good. You know, of course, you know, everything changed last year in March. Last year in March, we had the first lockdown here in Austria.
Yeah.
I don't know. How was it in the UK? Also in March? Or?
Same. Yeah. I think we were later than most people. I think we screwed it up a bit. But we were March. We were right at the end of March. Were you kind of early March? Mm-hmm. Were you? Yeah.
Yeah, early March till, yeah. I think it was the first lockdown was until end of April.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, a lot of stuff changed right there. You know, I locked myself up in my old apartment and, you know, I used to live in this really small apartment, like 23 square meters.
Yeah, wow.
It's like, how many square feet? I don't know.
I don't know, but yeah, I know that's pretty small. I can't do the conversion, but that's pretty small, yeah. It's
like one room, yeah.
Yeah, and wow.
Actually, I spent all of my time right there planning the future of the academy and like what I'm going to do online. And actually, since then, you know, everything worked out really well for us before the lockdown. But since then, since I had like so much time to like do the planning and okay, what are we going to focus on in the future?
Yeah.
Like so much of the stuff has become like better. The video production, our lessons have become way better. We started another company, drumnerds.net, where we sell a drum.
Yeah, I've seen all that stuff, man. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. That's really cool.
And we launched that one last month, actually like 3 weeks ago, just three weeks ago. It was like 1 year of work, but now we launched this company as well, and it's going great so far. So busy, but really happy.
So almost in a lot of ways, this whole lockdown situation has been a bit of a benefit.
For me at least, but still it's like, I'm not happy with the current situation, I have to be honest.
Of course.
Same for you. You know, we know so many musicians and you are directly affected by the lockdowns and all of that stuff. Actually, it's a sad situation for the music scene, but I think there's still hope. And I'm actually...
Absolutely.
And right now, it's the April the 7th, 2021. And I feel that in like autumn this year, maybe September, October, maybe somewhere around there, maybe we can start doing live shows again. I hope so.
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people, not just musicians, because, you know, as a fan of music, as we all are, I think we, you know, all of us want live music back, not just the musicians. So it's just so unprecedented, isn't it? And we've never had anything like this before. I mean, even my parents are obviously a lot older now, and I was talking to them about it, and they said they've never lived through anything even close to this. So it's kind of, you know, you can't go to anyone for advice about all this stuff because no one knows what to do.
that's true. But actually, you know, when all of that stuff started to happen last year, actually my main focus was just, okay, is my family okay? Are my like close friends, everyone that I know, are they all okay? Are they all safe? And, you know, that's also like one of the big benefits of like that happened to me last year. You know, since all of my companies are 100% online based companies. I still have a steady income, so I don't have to worry about anything right there. And this gives me the freedom to support those like around me that need some financial support right now, because actually like this whole situation fucked up many lives. And so actually that's like now the online business thingy is a good thing right now.
It's great.
Like,
take a while before that kind of became the case? Like, I don't want to say a struggle, but I guess every business has to go through a struggle at some point. But was it tricky in the beginning when you were first kicking this off, or was it relatively quick to be, you know, quite successful?
Yeah, actually it happened all relatively quick and easy, because, you know, the first online course, I started with an online course, Single Stroke Mastery. And that was like, I think 5 years ago already, 2016.
Wow.
That was my first online course. And, you know, back in the days, I still had a regular job. And, you know, I was recording in the evenings and in the morning. And then I went to work and then I recorded again. But it was just like the online course sales. I didn't need that income at first. And after like 1 year, I quit my regular day job and just focused on teaching. But there was never any risk, because it was just like my own like income that I needed to secure. And I had this after 1 year.
Was this with the old apartment as well? Were you still in
this? This was in the old apartment as well. Yeah. Nice. That's funny, because with Single Stroke Mastery in the background, you can see this lake and woods, you know. But I recorded in front of a green screen in this 23 square meter apartment.
And that's amazing.
It was like, but it was good times, but crazy times, you know. Each time I wanted to record, I had to move the couch. I was sleeping on the couch. I had to move the couch to have enough space on the green screen. And then I recorded myself. But it was like, still good times. It was the beginnings and cool.
I was going to say, I guess that's kind of the, and in a, you know, you said, I guess it wasn't too much of a struggle, but in a lot of ways, those small things are the struggles, you know, having to sleep on a couch, having to put up the green screen, moving everything around, not knowing how it's going to go, if anyone's going to be into it. And I guess, you know, they're the struggles, aren't they? The small struggles.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. You know, one thing that like, one advice that I got from, I wouldn't call, kind of a mentor of mine, but a good friend, but like he has like two really successful companies. And one thing that he told me before, because I told him I wanted to focus on teaching. I don't want to tour anymore. You know, I stopped in 2015 and in 2016, I released my first course. And I told him I want to focus 100% on teaching. And I want to do this online and I want to record this online course. And actually, he just gave me one advice, and this was is still true. And this is like the was like this game, big game changer advice. So I'm giving you guys and girls this stuff for free.
Oh, pro tips, pro tips.
But it's so simple, but it's important. And the important thing is, it doesn't matter if you teach or if you sell a product or whatever you do. Don't think about yourself. Think about how can I help others in a really efficient and good way. So if the student, the drumming student or the customer or whoever comes first, then you will be successful. And so I didn't think about income and selling courses at first. My only goal was to record video lessons that have a huge benefit for a small price. And I wanted to be available to as many people as possible. And that's it.
And that's, the rest is history, basically.
Yeah, really, you know, actually, you know, with Single Stroke Mastery, I didn't have an, back in the days, I didn't have an advertising budget. So actually, I just released the course. It was on my homepage. And sometimes I recorded YouTube videos and also told people about this course. So if you want to learn more, check out the course. That was it back then. And it worked out great. And
Wow. Have you always been doing... you know, ever since Single Stroke Mastery and even before, have you always been teaching? Like, what was the moment where you wanted to start teaching? Was that because you were doing private lessons and then you wanted to expand on that? Or what was the process there?
You know, that was interesting. I think I started to study drums in 2011 in Vienna. I was still on tour. And like when I was in Vienna, I studied drums at the conservatory. And back then I started to teach. And, you know, like after 1 or 2 years, you know, sometimes, you know, when you have a student that's like really motivated and you see the results and, you know, he has goals in mind and he reaches those goals and you are the one that helps your student reach their goals.
Yes.
Really, that was such a huge payoff for me that back then I already knew, okay, this was going to be my path. So it started there with teaching, but I didn't know that before. So actually I just found out about that. I'm really passionate about teaching when I started to teach, because it was like, I really loved it.
Okay. So it was a kind of a natural thing. You were just like, wow, I love this. You didn't kind of force it. You weren't maybe expecting to become a teacher, but it just, you just fell in love with it. Wow.
Yeah. That's how it all started. Yeah.
And you were, because obviously, well, you were with, how long were you with Belphegor? There was a few years, right?
From 2009 till 2015, 6 years.
Okay. And I guess, well, Belphegor have always been in my lifetime in the industry anyway, Belphegor have always been a busy touring, you know, successful band. I assume you were relatively busy around that time, touring, recording, all that stuff. And was that, I assume now you don't, do you tour at all anymore? I mean, no one tours now, but you know, but before all this, you know, craziness, do you do any touring really? Do you like play, were you playing live shows or,
I played my last live show in December of 2016 and I knew this was going to be my last live show for a long time because I wanted to do this teaching thing. I wanted to go all the way. And I also saw back then, I saw many drummers that kind of did teaching, you know, at the side as a side hustle.
Yeah.
But they didn't really want to focus on teaching. It was just like an extra income. And for me, I didn't want it to be like some extra income. I wanted to become a really good teacher, and I still want to become a really good teacher. I'm learning every day.
Yeah, so, well, you're doing incredibly well, I'd say, from the outside.
Thank you. Yeah, it's going well, yeah. But I still have a lot to learn. And also, a funny side story, I released a YouTube video about 2 weeks ago, and like 3 years ago, I released almost the same video, but the tips in that video changed because I learned more efficient ways. It was about double bass drumming. So actually, I'm constantly learning, and like it's actually I'm not sure about others, but for me, this is an exciting journey of learning how to bring your student from point A to point B quickly and efficiently and without that much frustration, because it can be frustrating from time to time as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I guess it's like anything, like being a drummer takes a lifetime, doesn't it? To kind of, I mean, no one ever masters being a drummer, obviously. Even some of the best drummers in the world, they would still tell you that, you know, they're I'm still learning every day. But I guess anything that you do well takes a lifetime, doesn't it? And I guess the whole process of just teaching, that's not just I can teach, not anybody can teach, because my wife's a lecturer at university, and she's been teaching her entire adult life. And just the small things that she tells me about, you know, how to relay information and blah, blah, blah. If you do that, they're not going to listen, and, or, you know, all that kind of thing. And I just thought, it's really, being married to her, I've realized, oh, shit, there's so much that goes into teaching. It's not just standing up there and telling people information. You have to engage, and you have to, you know, as you said, you have to get them there efficiently without all this extra bullshit that they don't need, because then they're not going to be interested. And
that's
and
all it. That stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you find that you learn the more kind of, I assume the more students you have and the more people that, because everyone learns differently, do you learn pretty much with every student? Is it like a growing experience every time almost?
Yes. You know, every student is different, you know, different goals, of course, but also like different backstory, different kind of ambition when it comes to practicing, like the skill to, and I think this is a skill, the skill to sit down and practice something that is not fun in the beginning. terrible, but those students that can, like, I don't want to use the word force, but the students that have the determination to sit down for at least 20 to 30 minutes and practice something, like consciously practice something that's not fun in the beginning, those are the ones that like perform really well, and they need some different kind of support than another students who might like be discouraged really quickly, which is also okay, you know?
Yeah.
And actually, as a teacher, it's your job to like find and offer solutions for both types of students.
There's not one size fits all kind of thing. Unfortunately, that would be much easier for everybody.
Yeah, that's true. That's 100%. It would be way easier, but
but you know, and I guess that's, you know, that's quite, I'd say, well, it's very honest of you that you've said about your YouTube video 3 years ago to now that it's pretty much the same, but it's a lot better, isn't it, in your head? And I guess that the one that was about the stomper.
My friend.
Oh,
you
man, I loved that one. That was killer. Because I'm watching it. If anyone hasn't seen it, what's the title of the video? We need to promote this.
Yeah, let me check real quick.
Because it's a great video, man. It's really good.
Thank you. The title of the video is "The Three Worst Bass Drum Frustrations,"
and it makes total sense. Because I mean, I watched that and I identified with each character, and all firstly at different points in my playing, and also now, like especially if I'm kind of, because at the moment I don't know about one, well, I guess you're still working a lot, so you have to play all the time, I assume, and record and I don't practice as much as I used to, for obvious reasons. I'm looking after the kids more and I don't have as many reasons to practice. But even the other day, I was, you know, trying to do some faster stuff, and I found myself being the stomper again, and I was like, what? I haven't been the stomper in ages. Oh, this is what happens when you take too much time away. your body forgets how to do these things, and it's kind of do you find as well? Because I've talked about this a lot with pretty much everybody that I've had on the podcast too, is maintenance is a huge part of it as well. It's not just getting to that point. It's especially with, you know, our type of music, the extreme side of things.
Yes.
Maintenance is that something that you try and kind of push on people as well? Keep at it. Don't just do it and then stop. Like, you got to keep going.
You got to keep going. Yeah. But actually, you know, maintenance, that's like one of my, like, the most frustrating topics ever, you know, as drummer. You know, you were, let's say your focus is double bass and you want to reach like 240 BPM, 60 notes for four bars straight.
Yeah.
That's your goal. Okay. And now you're like at 200. So you're going to practice, you know, you're going to watch some tutorials, maybe adapt your pedal settings a bit. And then one day you are there, you're at 240 and everything's cool and fine and you're happy.
You're on top of the world.
You're on top of the, you reached your goal. But actually, to stay up there, you have to practice the same thing over and over again. And actually, I got a big problem with that because I have a hard time practicing stuff that I already can do now just to maintain that skill. It, like, I think it's really frustrating. And that's like, it's funny that you ask me that question, because that's like the main reason why we have created this new company, drumnerds.net, because basically, you know, all the stuff, all our right now we got three products. And all the stuff that we offer are products that I use myself. And the main focus of that stuff, of those like new invented products, is to like at least cut down the maintenance time in half. So by that, I mean, I hate like to repeat the same stuff over and over again. That's the reason why we have developed the workout stick, for example, that stick with that extra movable rate.
What are they made out of?
Aluminum.
Oh, okay. So it's not a super heavy, or are they, I assume they're heavy. They look like they're heavy.
The stick is 150 grams and the stick weight, I think I have to check again. I think it's around 50.
Okay.
50 grams. And what you can do with this movable weight, you can like attach it at the butt end of the stick, like behind the leverage point.
Yeah.
This helps you like to slow down the motion, and it makes it really easy to learn a new technique like finger control or open close or whatever, because like it's like you can practice in slow motion, and every time you're doing something wrong, you can actually correct yourself while you're doing it. And so you got extra time, it makes it way easier. And you can also attach the weight in front of the leverage point. There we have three different workout settings that make you work way harder. And I'm using those sticks with the workout 2 setting. That's like my favorite setting right now.
Yeah.
And I just use them for the warm-up because, you know, almost every drummer, when you start to warm up, and if you start to warm up on a practice pad, you start with like some standard rudiment, singles, doubles, paradiddles at a slow tempo.
Yeah.
And a slow tempo means, okay, basically I'm practicing something that I can do already just to get like the blood flowing. And
exactly. Yeah. Yeah. A warm up.
No,
yeah. Exactly.
It's a warm up.
Warming up everything. Yeah. Exactly.
Warming up. And what I feel like is, okay, I'm repeating the same stickings over and over again. And at one point, there's no, it's just a warm up. And I'm not, I want to challenge myself during the warm up already. So I'm increasing the challenge with that extra weight. I'm still warming up, but it's like, it also helps me develop. So actually I can already improve when I'm practicing at a really slow tempo. And that's why I really like the workout sticks, because like I'm already working the muscle groups in my forearm. And this way I can cut down my maintenance time, like at least in half.
Because you're working extra than you normally would, I guess, with regular sticks. So therefore, hopefully, overcompensating and bringing down that time that you'd need to spend on a pad just going...
That's it. That's
it. However long. Yeah.
But I don't know about about you. How much practice time do you got per week for just like practicing without just maintenance?
Just maintenance. Oh, that's a good one. I think I revealed a lot earlier when I said that I was struggling with some bass drum stuff. But I think now, obviously, if we go before COVID, I'd definitely say that I'd probably do about 2 to 3 hours a week of maintenance. And that would often be, even if that's just, you know, single strokes to a click on a pad, hands and feet, rudiments, all that kind of stuff. I'd also probably include, you know, stuff that would keep me ready for playing shows in that time as well. So that would be like, I've got some stuff that I do, like kit mobility stuff to move around the kit. Yeah, so probably 2 to 3 hours a week maximum. That would be absolute maximum. Whereas now it's probably 20 minutes a week. So, but you know, I guess that's a big thing, isn't it? That everybody has A, different amounts of time, B, different reasons for it. Mm-hmm. And I guess finally, everyone has different motivation. So as you say, like some people love just doing these things constantly. Because I was speaking to Dan Presland recently, and he still does his what he calls drills.
Yeah.
And you know, and I mean, he's still doing a lot of recording and stuff as well. But for me, I get like everybody's different. I have to have some kind of goal, and playing live is usually a goal for me. And at the moment, it's a bit like, oh well, what's my goal now? You know, what's the point? I still love to play, but a lot of it is just froofing around and just improvising, and you know, not really focused. And how is that for you? Like, what? How much do you focus on maintenance, and how much are you still pushing yourself these days?
Yeah. You know, at the moment, since we are releasing new YouTube tutorials each week, and also I'm doing some back work in the background, you know, for drumnerds.net.
Yeah.
And so actually right now, and this was like the last year as well, I practice only for short periods of time. So 20 to 30 minutes is a practice session for me.
Okay. A day is that pretty much?
A day. Yeah. And yeah. I do that three times per week, maybe four times per week. So 20 to 30 minutes. Three to four times per week, that's it. And actually, you know, I'm like, just like you, I always need a goal, or like I need a reason to sit down at the drum kit. And with those 20 to 30 minute practice sessions, the goal always stays the same. For me, it's just, I want to be tied to at up to 260 BPM with hands and feet. In comparison to the some of the teachers I see at the academy, you know, Ken Denny, Eugene, you know, they're like at 280. Kevin Paradis is crazy.
Kevin Paradis on another planet, isn't it?
Really, this guy's on another planet. Yeah, Dan Presland, next guy. I got a funny story about Dan, but I'm in a second.
Okay. And so, I love Dan.
I'm not at 280. Yeah, me too. I'm not at 280 or 300. It's like 260. I want to be tight and comfortable. You know, sometimes I also release drum covers on YouTube.
Yeah, and I love the Rammstein one. That was killer. Yeah. Exactly that what that song needed.
Yeah. Extra double bass. Yeah. You know, and when I record those drum covers, my only goal is I don't want to look like I got a heart attack. You know,
I
still want to be able to play it relaxed, and I still want it to be tight, and that's it. So that's my only goal, and I'm happy with that. And 20 to 30 minutes, 3 to 4 times per week, that's enough to like stay at that level.
Yeah, and I guess so, outside of that, I assume you're still, because to record your videos and stuff, you're still playing. Aren't you?
That's it.
So outside of that 20 to 30 minutes, you're still playing a lot, I assume.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily the kind of pushing yourself I guess it is maintenance, because you're showing people things that you can already play. So I guess you're, you know, that's in itself is a type of maintenance, isn't it? So I guess you're still playing a lot.
That's true. Yeah. You know, before each video recording, I play like for, again, 30 minutes. Yeah. But like when it comes to video recording, the weird stuff is actually, you know, if you, let's say like in the last video that was about a bass drum speed exercise and an exercise to relax at higher tempos. Because if you want to play really fast, it's a good idea to also be able to relax at those high tempos.
Exactly. And no stomping.
No stomping, yeah. You just want like, yeah, you want to, the faster you go, the more you want to relax. So, and like before we recorded that video, actually all I did, I repeated the same exercise over and over again, which was switching between 16 notes and 16 note triplets.
Yeah.
And I started at a slow tempo. I think it was 100 BPM.
Yeah.
So like for 5 minutes, just focusing on being relaxed and being tight. And then I increased the tempo to 110, 120. And at the end, I think we recorded at 160 or 170. So I switch between 60 notes and 60. And actually, it's always the same exercise. It's just I use it as a warm up, and then I also record the same exercise.
Yeah, no, that's cool. That shows. I mean, I think that's proof as well that the stuff that you're teaching, you're not just teaching it; you actually use it as well. You know, it's actually. You know, I'm sure. I don't know lots of, especially in this kind of extreme drumming situation, but I assume there's a lot of teachers that just, you know, they teach stuff and they don't really know how to play it. They're probably just like, oh yeah, there you go. So the fact that you're actually using this stuff, and you know, you're kind of making sure you can act, you know, you can play it really well and you're comfortable with it, that will give it more life, I think, because you know, it's actually something that you use and that works.
Yeah, actually, it's funny that you mentioned that. You know, with drum teachers, you know, one thing that I see quite often is like the first archetype of drum teacher. It's like, okay, he's teaching you some stuff, but he's not really that solid.
Yeah.
yet.
Yeah, he still needs to learn it as well, kind of.
Yeah. And actually, you know, I have so much stuff to learn. Right now, I'm focusing on brush playing. So I'm playing with brushes a lot. And I don't dare to teach that stuff. Although I've been practicing with brushes for like 3 or 4 years now.
Wow.
Like continuously, I really like that stuff. But I'm not there yet at that level, you know. And actually, if you want to learn about brush playing, I just would recommend like some really good teachers. You can find them online. Like so many out there that are really killing it, and those are the right guys, the go-to guys when it comes to that stuff. And I actually don't dare to teach brushes at the moment. I'm not that bad anymore, but I'm still not there yet, so I have a long way to go.
Yeah, but I guess they those brush guys probably wouldn't try and teach, you know, 260 double bass, I assume, at the same time. Maybe they would, I don't know, but...
yeah. And, you know, the other archetype of drum teacher that I see quite often, and actually I'm guilty of that as well. When I first started out in 2016, I focused, and I'm guilty, I have to say this to everyone that's listening, I'm guilty of that. In 2016, my main focus when I started to promote my online lessons was to show off. And by showing off, I mean, I recorded a 10-minute 230 BPM blast beat video and 300 BPM double bass. And then I recorded the Belphegor song Lucifer Incestus at 270 BPM, 10 BPM faster than the original. And this
it
was
doesn't
just,
need to be faster, that one.
Musically, there's no need to play this song fast. Actually, it sounds bad because, you know, it's kind of lost the groove. It was just me showing off, and I'm not proud of that, but I have to mention it, that I was there. I thought this was the go-to thing as a drum teacher, to just show off and look at me, what I can do.
Yeah.
But as I get older, I'm 34 years old now. As I get older, at one point I just found out for myself that it's not about me when it comes to teaching. It's about the students and their skills, and I want them to improve as fast as possible. And it's okay to from time to time show that you can, like, you can play that stuff. That's important. You got to know what you're doing, but the rest of the time, of the teaching time, is not about me. It's like 99% about the students and their progress, and 1% about me shortly showing that I can do that stuff as well. And that's it. I did this differently in the past.
Yeah,
not proud of it, but
well, and again, and this all goes part back to the learning process for yourself, isn't it, as well? That true. You know, that, and the fact that you have come so far. And I think there are quite a lot of, I wouldn't say teachers, like, I don't want to offend anybody, but there's quite a lot of content out there, educational content, quote unquote, for this style of drumming. But, you know, you definitely stand head and shoulders above the rest, and obviously you're doing very well because of it. And I think probably the main difference that I can tell from speaking to you now as well is that you are prioritizing the student over prioritizing, look how fast I am, honestly I'm really good. Look how good I am. And I guess, you know, I think I mean, because I remember Benny Greb, obviously the legend Benny Greb, I remember her quote from him about teaching was never assume the person you're teaching can't teach you something as well, or something like that. You know, that never assume you always know more than the person you're teaching. You know, there must be, not necessarily about drums, you know, that the person you're teaching could know much more than you about something else, and you can quite easily learn from them. And I guess, as you've said, you learn more about yourself the more people that you teach, and the more situations you get yourself into, and the more, it must be hard, man. Is it a tricky, do you consider it a tricky job? Or is it kind of, do you still have that passion that you had those first, you know, do you still get that buzz that you had on those first few lessons?
Okay. As a teacher, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. Actually, but my goals and my passion changed a little bit, you know. In the beginning, you know, especially when I recorded the Bass Drum Mastery online course, it was like, okay, I want to compress my knowledge into this 9-week online course and that's it. Then I'm done.
Yeah.
And this course did really, really well. So like in February, we had the student number 10,000 sign up for the Bass Drum Mastery course alone.
Wow.
So, like,
that's
this
incredible,
one is,
dude.
But I have to tell you, at one point, I kind of, you know, I recorded the course and like all of my knowledge is in there when it comes to foot technique. And it worked out so well that actually I was at the point where I didn't really have to work anymore because the course was selling itself and I was like done. And that was a point in time where I kind of lost my passion. But luckily at that point, we also launched the Drum Technique Academy, which is more like, I'm in close contact with the students in our closed Facebook group. So they constantly post their videos there. They talk about their frustrations. And sometimes drumming, if you have certain goals and you can't reach them right away, this can be really frustrating. And so I'm really close to those students in that Facebook group. And actually, I really, if you show me like one picture, I can tell you the name of the full name of the student, the techniques he's using, or he or she's using.
That's because awesome.
I see them almost every day, you know, they constantly post their progress videos. And, you know, since we constantly getting new students into that Facebook group, like I'm a part of their journey and they allow me to be a part of their journey. They share their progress there. Everyone gives them tips. We got a cool community there. And so it doesn't get boring and it's always a new challenge. Really, it's always something new.
It's a really great community as well. I'm still a part of it in the group, and it's like, because as we all know, especially the YouTube community can be vicious. I'm sure you've experienced it firsthand as well, but that community is really nice because everyone's like, I don't think I've ever really seen, I mean, I don't look at it obviously as much as you, but everyone's super positive. And if someone's got a problem, there'll be multiple people that come in and they'll be like, oh, you know, try this, dude, or try this. And it's really lovely because, like, you know, I guess we all had to go through it when we were younger where I don't know what it was like for you in Austria, but I was the only guy in my kind of local area that played this kind of music. You know? And I, you know, I couldn't call anyone or, you know, be like, oh, how do I push past 180? And so to have this community for these people that are trying to do that is amazing. That's really, really amazing. And was that kind of the Drum Technique Academy, was that a goal of yours to have like a student community instead of just this one video, as you were saying, that was, you know, be all end all one video? You wanted to actually have students definitely.
You know, I wanted to combine this teaching aspect that I already had with bass drum mastery and single stroke mastery, and I wanted to combine it with coaching. And coaching, you know, sometimes if a student posts a video about like double bass and he asks, okay, is this okay, or like if I change this happens, can you help me here? Actually, most of the time it's just like one or two sentences of advice that do the trick, and then he can go back to the drum kit and start practicing again. It's all good. So this coaching aspect is really cool, and I really like the results we're getting with that one. And that's the main thought behind the academy. And since you mentioned the community itself, that's also like a good thing for me, is I don't really need any financial benefits from the academy. Mm. So, and we had students that were like different, you know, they joined the academy and like, they like to talk down on others, you know, on like beginners. And
that sucks.
But that's like, okay, everyone is different. And maybe someone needs this kind of tough feedback. Like, okay.
Yeah, tough love. Yeah.
Tough love. Yeah. And actually you suck and you shouldn't record videos. Go back to the drum. But that's not the community that I wanted to create. And we had like, it was not 10 students, but like, let's say 5 or 6, maybe that I just kicked them out of the academy. I don't need their money if that's the kind, if they have this kind of negative down talking vibe. That's not good for a like, it's like poison for a community, actually.
Absolutely. And as we were saying, that kind of shit you get on YouTube. So if you if you can keep it out, then, you know, leave it to YouTube. Like, that's not what you want. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's your community. You want to have control over that kind of stuff, especially. And we all know what it's like being a beginner. Like, I mean, even now I'm far from a beginner, but I've got so many insecurities about my playing. So let alone someone who's just starting out and then some random dude is just like, oh, you suck. Yeah, that's not cool, man. That's I guess people just people like to be mean, don't they? I don't know why. But
yeah.
But the with the academy bringing in outside teachers, which I guess is how me and you started talking. Was that was that a conscious decision or was that a natural progression? So that was a conscious thing.
You know, this goes back a long way. Have you been a part of the Derek Roddy forum?
Yeah,
like
dude.
In 2006, 7, 8,
yeah,
something like
I
that?
I think every one of our generation was, was definitely in that. Yeah. That was the only place to be.
That was the only place to be. And I was a part of that community as well. I really loved it. But back then, and I still remember, I think it was the Black Dahlia Murder cover you released back then.
Oh, shit. Yeah, wow. God, yeah.
With those Pearl Eliminator pedals.
Yeah, dude. The belt drives. Hell yeah.
And it was so tight back then already. So, wow.
Oh, thanks, great. Man.
It was the Black Dahlia Murder and also Aborted, right? I think you posted
Yeah, because I joined Aborted. I didn't get into the Black Dahlia, but about a year... Obviously, I didn't get into Black Dahlia. around a year afterwards, I joined Aborted, and then I posted a
I saw that one.
But the Derek Roddy forum. Wow, so I missed that place.
Yeah, me too. I really liked that. You know, one thing that I saw back then, and this changed recently, like in the last 2 or 3 years. Back then, in the Derek Roddy forum, you know, there were some drummers in there that were already kind of successful touring drummers. To me, they were like highly successful. They had what I wanted. I wanted to be on tour, and they were on tour. And when it came to the topics of hand technique, hand speed, and also especially double bass drumming, like the one thing that I read so many times was something like, yeah, I just got these pedals and I just play. So if you want to learn that stuff, there's nothing I can show you. You just have to practice and then you'll get there or you won't. And I, you know, because I failed so miserably, I was really bad at playing double bass in the beginning. It was terrible. It took me so long. But, you know, I developed this kind of formula to develop double bass skills, single strokes to a certain point. And I taught this to others and it worked for them as well. And this kind of advice back then that every drummer seemed to give is like, yeah, you just got to practice and either you got it or you don't.
Yeah.
I back then I thought this is not true, and still I'm 100% sure this is not true. Mm-hmm. If you can walk and if you can run, then you can also, you got the necessary muscle groups to play double bass.
Absolutely.
Just need someone to show you how. And that was like the one thing back then that I didn't like about the forum, but the rest was awesome. Like the exchange of information. It was like the beginning of YouTube 2006.
Yeah. I think it was the real explosion of our style of drumming too. Like, I mean, obviously everybody knew about, not everybody, but you know, everyone in the extreme metal world knew about our kind of drumming. But when when that forum came out and everyone was just talking about it 24 hours a day, it just kind of made it this whole other, you know, it made it its whole thing. I remember loving when people would put up pictures of their kits. Do you remember the show us your kits thing? I'd nerd out on that so hard. I just loved seeing all these massive drum kits.
Yeah. Then the close-up pictures of their pedal settings.
Yeah. it's such a unique part of our style of drumming, isn't it? Like nerding out about pedal settings and spring tension and technique. Yeah. I assume rock drummers don't worry so much about pedal settings.
No.
Maybe they do, I don't know. But
but actually, you know, I still remember that one story about you and the aborted recording session. Is this one true? Well, like, you didn't bring your pedals or your Pearl pedals broke and you recorded the record with a Tama pedal?
Yeah, I record. Yeah,
I can't remember that.
Yeah, wow.
Don't forget those stories.
Where did you hear that from?
I think it was on the Derek Roddy forum.
Oh wow! Did I say it? Or
I'm not sure, but somehow I don't know.
Yeah, no. Yeah, that was very. That was a strength. That's amazing. Yeah. But I can't remember what happened. I cannot remember what happened. But for whatever reason, obviously, I used Iron Cobras, and they were like relatively old kind of squeaky ones, and it was a hard recording session anyway because of for various reasons that I won't go into now, but it was really hard. And I remember there was a couple of times where as you know as well, and as I've talked about a lot before on this podcast, is being in the studio is a real kind of it makes you realize that you're not as good as you think you are in your head. And I think that on top of, I mean, it was the first album I did, the only album I did with Aborted. So I was lots of pressure and having gear that I wasn't used to. There's a lot about that album now that I look back on and I'm just like, oh shit, if only I could go back, you know. But you know, that's life, isn't it? That's just life. And obviously you have to take those things and learn from them. And
yes.
And I think, you know, especially back then, I didn't understand the need for having spare gear. You know, why would you need a spare set of pedals? You know, and that those little things of, you know, and that's why that again, it's all live and learn situations, isn't it?
So,
So are you in a way you almost trying to replicate, not replicate, obviously, but make a kind of more up to date version of that, the Roddy forum?
That's some more positivity. With some more, you know, actually, that's also a funny thing. That's, you know, I can talk about everything because all those topics, because I'm not in a band anymore and the companies I'm talking about, I own them, so I can do whatever I want. So, but in the beginning, you know, with the Drum Team Academy, one like big challenge in the beginning, you know, metal drummers are competitive, you know, because if you're on tour and if you play badly for like a couple of shows, there's always the next guy, and maybe he's even on the same tour package gets offered your gig. It's like, it is like, we are a cool community, but of course, if you want to be on top, you know, you have to be good. And if you're not good, then you're going to be replaced.
That's the truth. We've seen it a lot, haven't we? You know, throughout the history of many bands that, you know, people be replaced for various reasons. And a lot of those reasons are because they've become lazy or complacent and they're not as good as they were, or egos, all that kind of
egos
stuff
as well. And you know, with the academy, you know, when I told the first couple of drummers the idea of that I want to combine their teachings on one platform, and sometimes I invited more than one drummer here to the academy office, it was like we had like Eugene Ryabchenko, myself, and Nils Fjellström. The Dominator, for example, like three drummers in one room, two or three days.
All trying to be really fast.
And everyone. Niels and Eugene won. I lost that challenge. You know, in the beginning, it was kind of difficult to, I wouldn't call it egos, but, you know, since it's very competitive, I like... to get them all to teach at the academy wasn't that easy in the beginning, but now
that's interesting.
But now actually, you know, now it's normal, you know. We have like the Academy, we launched it like 2 years ago, and now it's like, okay, that's the new normal, the new standard. It's cool to
say. Yeah. Is it only 2 years? It feels like it's been a part of the kind of, you know, metal drumming community forever now. So.
No, we launched it in April, actually. April 1st, 2019, yeah.
Wow. 2 years. That's amazing, man. And yeah, obviously a lot of growth in those 2 years as well. A lot of this has happened relatively, I guess not quickly, because a lot of it takes preparation, and I'm sure there's so much behind the scenes that nobody has any idea about that you have to do on a day-to-day basis. But that's really interesting, though, about the competitive thing. And I've always thought about this, because especially our style of drumming is very physical, isn't it? And it's like, as we all know, to get to those points, 180 and above, 200, blah, 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 it's pushing past things that you don't feel comfortable with.
Yes.
And you know, I've always wondered if there's a parallel between, you know, sports or, you know, kind of the physical aspects of life and our kind of drumming, you know, whether people that found extreme metal drumming, whether in a different life they might be an athlete or something, do you know what I mean? Because because it takes so much kind of just kind of getting your head down, and as you say, even for 30 minutes, but doing 30 minutes of just to a metronome,
yeah,
you know, a lot, you know, a large majority of drummers would be like, fuck that. So I really wonder if there's some kind of thing that you have to have, you know, like a competitive streak in you to be able to even kind of approach this kind of drumming. I've always wondered that, and the fact that you've noticed a competitive thing, it makes total sense now that you mention it. I've totally noticed that as well, but I didn't even register it until you just said. But that makes total sense. Do you find any kind of parallels in there? Do you feel like there's a kind of, you need, almost need to be a little bit competitive to even kind of approach this style of drumming?
Yeah, I think if you got this competitive mindset, it can help. It can definitely help. And I'm one of those drummers with this kind of, especially in the past, with this kind of competitive mindset.
Yeah.
You know, as you get older, you get more mature.
Absolutely. And then you check it.
We is bigger than me. And as a young drummer, you know, that was like one of my go-tos. I was competitive. And actually, if you just open up YouTube and search for 250, 260, 270 BPM blast beat, you can see guys competing over BPMs. And I was one of them back in the day. So you can find them really quickly. Yeah. And it works for some. Then there are others that are just I know this is a metal context, but I'm still going to say it like that. They are in love with metal drumming and the sound they produce. And many of those are also teaching at the Academy. And I think you are one of those as well. You're also you really like that kind of music. I don't want to use the word love too much on your podcast. But, you love the sound of a good, well-performed blast beat or some tight double bass.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
So, and I got like this one story about one of our teachers that I can share here. Nils Fjellström, the Dominator. We flew him to Austria from Sweden, and it was me and Eugene picked him up at the airport. Then we were here at the Academy office, and we recorded like one full Q&A lesson with like 90 minutes nonstop. Nils Fjellström. We talked about everything.
Super loud blasting for 90 minutes.
He's a machine. This guy's a machine. But with Nils, when I got to know him better, because I didn't know him before, which was more like on tour, we said hi, but that was it.
Yeah.
And when I got to know him better, and especially during the second day where we also recorded some technique tutorials for the Academy, in between those recording sessions, you know, it was like, okay, I was at the computer, I was like checking the video files. Are the cameras all working? Is everything good? Yeah. Eugene was preparing coffee all the time. That was his thing to do. Eugene makes great coffee, so shout out to Eugene.
No complaints.
No complaints. Eugene is the man. And Nils, at the same time, Nils was playing drums all the time. So wow. Niels is not competing with me or with Eugene or someone else. He just loves to play drums. And when he didn't play drums on the drum kit, he had his small practice pad and he was not really practicing. He just loves to play drums and he played all the time. Wow. And every time he played, you know, he had this kind of, how do you call it? Like, he was happy and content. Niels Bjerstrøm doesn't need anything else. He doesn't need to like show off you know, he's just doing what he loves. And it's like, if you like watch this, like young soccer players that they just enjoy going out and playing soccer all day long, spending the afternoon with their friends playing soccer.
Yeah.
He's the same with a drum kit. He doesn't need like a long conversation with Martin or with Eugene. He spent all of his time here practicing and playing drums.
He doesn't
drums.
Want to talk about spring tension or...
but he tried different, you know, since here at the academy office, at one point I realized, okay, we got so many different drummers here and I need more drum pedals, you know.
Yeah, because everyone's different. Yeah,
everyone's different. And we have like Eliminators, Tama Iron Cobra, then the Charchi Kopito, Axis pedals, the P16. So we got many pedals here at the academy office.
Yeah.
And he was trying the Axis pedals. Then he also switched to the Eliminators. But he's not really like into, okay, is this spring tension?
Yeah,
like
the nerdy side of it, quote unquote. Yeah.
He just sets the pedals up in a way that they feel comfortable for him and then he's good to go.
And
then
rips.
He stops talking and he plays drums all the time.
Wow, man. And that's amazing.
Yeah, that's, I think, it's not a secret, but one of the key elements why he is so good, because he doesn't need that extra attention, or he's just like he's spending his day in his rehearsal room, he's playing drums. Wow. And when he's at home, he got his practice pad and then he's still
blasting. That's incredible. Yeah.
And that's why he's so far above.
And that that goes to, as we said before, everybody is so different and everybody has such different driving forces that from the sounds of things, he obviously doesn't even need a band. Like we were saying, we need a reason to sit down and have a goal. His goal is obviously just playing, playing for the sake of playing, that's really inspiring. That must have been quite inspiring to watch.
It was, you know, at one point, Eugene, just for fun, challenged him to play the Dark Funeral song, Nail Them to the Cross, which is like a 200 BPM and 60-note triplet. So actually, it's like 60 notes at 300.
I was going to say, it's incredibly fast,
Incredibly fast. And then, he played it here. And at first, he wasn't warmed up yet because we just started the session. And
so
then,
this was right at the start. Eugene
it was
like,
right at the start.
It, play it now.
Eugene challenged him. And
extra coffee.
The funny thing is, then in the beginning, he actually managed to get through this first double bass part, last beat part. But then he said, no, that's not tight. I want to try it again. And he tried it. It was like 20 to 30 minutes that he constantly played at 200 BPM. And then he got it, of course, he got it down perfectly. When he was ready and when he was warmed up.
Jesus.
It's like, to him, it's just like a fun challenge and he loves to do that stuff. Again, he doesn't need any kind of conversation. He just wants to play drums.
Just wants to play. That's amazing.
And it was a sight to behold. Yeah, it was great.
That's amazing. See, after the first one or two tries, I'd be like, that's good enough.
Yeah. Today is not the
Let's
day.
Let's talk about something. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I need more coffee and maybe some pastry or something.
Yeah.
A sugar kick.
Yeah.
Wow, man, that's amazing. But again, that really separates the men from the boys, as it were. Because I've heard, you know, again, speaking of kind of, you know, the best of all time, but you know, people like Matt Gasker and Virgil Donati, I've heard stories of them, you know, playing 8 to 10 hours a day. I've heard Virgil Donati. I didn't realize he's like 60.
Mm-hmm.
He's in his early 60s and he still tries to practice 4 to 6 hours a day.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, Jesus Christ. Like no wonder you're on another, you know, another planet but I think again that goes back to a point that it's not you have it or you don't. It's how much time and effort are you willing to put in to get to get to a certain point. Like, if you want to be the best or considered the best in the world, you have to practice 6 hours a day, every day for the rest of your life.
Yeah,
or if you know, or if you want to be like Nils, you have to play every single day blast beats all day. So
I think it's a really
important point that literally anyone can do this, I think. And it's just how far are you willing to go down the rabbit hole to to get to that point.
But actually, you know, the exact opposite example would be someone like Ken Bedeni,
Yeah.
Who's like incredibly fast. Ken is crazy
and
good.
Super relaxed as well.
And yeah, and super relaxed. And his approach, you know, I think I had him at the academy, I think two times teaching. And he also did some remote lessons. And one takeaway from him was, you know, he's not that kind of person that's like really really forcing himself during, and you can see it if you just watch a regular drum playthrough video of Ken, you can see this guy's relaxed. Actually, he's having fun. He's like
with his Crocs on.
With his Crocs on. He's the typical California surf boy.
Yeah, absolutely.
His Crocs. And he's destroying everything.
Yeah.
And I don't think that he's playing like 4 to 6 hours per day. I think he's not spending that much time at all. He just found a way for himself to make this work and has like a different kind of approach. So, you know, if you narrow it down just to like, if you want to be successful as a metal drummer, my first advice would be get your traditional blast beat down and make sure it's tight, and your double bass. And singles would be cool. If you want to go for doubles, go for doubles. And make sure that you're tight at like 240, maybe 260. Okay, that's cool already. It's actually really fast already.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Then you got like those, like this 80-20%, like this. You got the 80% with 20% of the work or effort.
Yeah. So, absolutely.
And I think Ken is one of those guys that's not like pushing 6 to 8 hours per day and has outstanding results. And
yeah,
again, they're all different.
Yeah, exactly. And I assume there must be people. Well, I can't think of any now, but I've definitely met drummers in other bands while I've been on tour that are unbelievably good. And then, you know, you say, oh, you know, what do you practice? What's your kind of routine? And they'll be like, well, I just play. And you're like, what? And I guess, you know, those kind of guys like the Kens and stuff, they're the exception generally. I would assume that generally, unfortunately, everybody who's listening, for the most part, you have to put the hours in unless somehow, you know, you're one of the lucky ones. But yeah, I guess I assume, again, I don't know Ken. I've spoken to him a handful of times on, you know, social media and stuff. But I can only assume that he's still passionate, massively passionate about drums. And
I
guess that is a big part of it too, isn't it? Is having the drive to even start in the first place and keep moving.
Yeah. You know, in the beginning when I started out, I always had to I think I'm one of those guys that had to work a bit harder to achieve certain results. It took me a bit longer through patience and persistence. But actually looking back, you know, I have to tell you, when I was like 16, 17, especially then at 18, 19, I love to spend time in my practice room just playing drums. And this was like such a great time. And still to this day, you know, when I got, you know, that's why I mentioned the brush playing before. I love the sound of brushes and I love to spend time working on that stuff. And there's nothing else right now that I can think of, like when it comes to sports or like going to the movies, which is not possible at the moment.
Yeah.
None of that stuff compares to just being in the rehearsal room and playing drums for me because I love it so much. So
yeah, absolutely. And I think I think that's something that connects most people that are successful, I guess, at not just drums, everything. I think it's not just something that they do for a job. It is, you know, it's a lot, because I'm sure you're the same. I still think about, even that when I'm looking after my kids or I'm in, you know, shopping or doing other stuff, always at the back of my mind is constantly ticking over. Oh, just thinking about little drum things, or, you know, little drum ideas, or, oh, what could I do next in the practice room? Oh, maybe I should try this next time. And I think that's a lot of the times the difference, isn't it? It's that it's an obsession and a compulsion almost. You have to do it. Otherwise, my wife tells me, if I haven't played drums for a couple of days, she'll just be like, you need to play drums. You're horrible today. So it's definitely a kind of a release for me in a lot of ways. Yeah, and I'm sure for a lot of people, it's the same. It's kind of a, you have to.
Yeah, you have to. It's awesome. In my opinion, it's an awesome way to spend your time, like your focused attention there. I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. And as far as just going back to the kind of playing as a touring musician, quote unquote, is there anything about it that you miss, like that you would like to do again?
Actually, you know, the traveling and open air shows.
Interesting.
Those two. You know, my first ever tour and was an US tour with Belphegor.
Wow.
And like the first show was in New York. And I've been to the States before, like one time before. And I was in LA for a couple of days. But other than that, I didn't see much of this planet yet. And, you know, when with the first US tour, it was like, wow, this is awesome. I love it. And yeah, I miss the traveling, definitely. And that's also like one thing. I don't think that I'm going to be on tour anytime soon. If it starts this year again. If anyone is, but I'm not planning to go on tour, you know, because I'm pretty sure you're in the same situation. If you are active online, or people like see you play drums in videos, I get contacted quite often, especially before COVID, like with tour offers, but I basically always say no. But at one point, I want to go back to the traveling part, but I don't think it's going to be with a band. Right now, I think I'm going to be more active as like with drum clinics.
Great.
Travel the world like that. And so I want to travel more again after COVID is done. And yeah, so that's what I miss most.
It makes sense. And I totally understand that, because everybody, including my family and friends, they're always like, oh, you're so lucky you got to go to Venezuela. And I'm like, yeah, it was great, but all I saw was an airport and a hotel. That's the issue. I mean, again, I'm not complaining, because traveling in or outside of a band is incredible. But sometimes when you're in a band situation, it's not really traveling. It's just kind of, you know, you're seeing another hotel in a different country, which is cool, you know, still cool, but it's not traveling like you would do if you went on a holiday, or as you well know.
That's true. But one thing that I really like about the touring experience, you know, it's true that you don't see like the typical tourist spots and get to check them out all the time. You know, I've never been to the, what's called, the Statue of Liberty in New York.
Neither have I, actually.
But I was in New York like 8 times.
Yeah, same. Yeah, exactly. I've never even seen it like in real life. Yeah, that's crazy.
No, me neither. But on the other hand, as touring musician, you really get into close contact with like the locals that work there at the venue. Dude.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you know, you get a lot of the country's vibe when you are there, and you like you work with those people. You know, you get to know some of them, and like, you share stories and you hang out. So I really like that.
Exactly. And you almost get a set. I've talked about this before. I totally agree with you there. It's kind of, you almost get a sense of the country without seeing it. You know, you can understand, oh, this is how they do it over here. That's different, but cool. Different. Okay. So, and you can immerse yourself almost more than you would as a tourist.
Because, as a tourist,
if you're a tourist, a lot of the time there's a wall up, isn't there? It's kind of like, oh, you're a tourist, come and spend your money.
That's it. If you're like a tourist and you spend your holidays in these all-inclusive clubs.
You don't see anything anyway.
You don't see anything either.
Me and my wife made a terrible mistake once. We wanted a last minute, it was before COVID, obviously. We wanted a last minute holiday to somewhere in Spain. And we ended up just choosing like a last minute package thing. because it was, you know, she had some last minute holiday from work she had to take, and it was one of those middle of nowhere, just a big resort, only English people.
Yeah. Well, lots of partying.
Yeah. Oh, and the food was just like fish and chips, and we were like, this is not why we came to Spain. So, but you're right. If you go on holiday in that situation, you're not really traveling either, are you?
Yeah.
So I guess touring in a band is actually a lot better than that in a lot of ways, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, I miss those. And I'm pretty sure this is an unpopular opinion as well. But, you know, I miss those, especially at the US tours, those long bus rides. I love to sit in the lobby of the bus. And just like I'm listening to music and I'm looking out of the window, and you know, it's my first time in Texas I'm in California, you know. I'm like from this small town in the south of Austria with like maybe 500
How did I get
people.
Here?
Yeah. And I'm allowed to be on this tour bus, and I see Texas.
And I think America especially it's made for traveling, isn't it? It's made for driving.
Yeah.
It's just incredible. Like just those sprawling landscapes of just nothing. And then there's a Walmart just out there.
And I also love those, you know, during the night, those Walmarts that are open 24/7 and you arrive at 2 a.m. and then you go in there and you get some food. I love that one as well. I really I like those experiences. Yeah.
It's often the smaller, because now with COVID, it's the smaller things of touring that I mean, obviously I miss the shows. Of course I miss the shows and the playing, but as you said, I think because drumming's such a part of our lives, I get a similar, you know, fulfillment just from playing.
Yeah.
Whereas it's those small experiences like meeting local people or interacting with fans or, you know, finding a little cafe around the corner from the venue or whatever. And, you know, I guess it's those little things that are they're the things that really make up the touring, you know, the joy of touring.
The joy of touring, yeah.
Obviously, the shows are great too. I'm not taking away from the shows.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I swear.
And all the stress that comes with the shows.
Yeah. Yeah, the stress that comes with the you know, one thing that I, how should I best, you know, one thing that I really liked, you know, when it comes to touring, how was it for you when you are on stage? You know, let's say it's you are on tour in the States and no open air shows, only club shows. And what do you miss most about the feeling of being on stage? Is it like interacting with the audience? I hear that quite often. That's why I repeat that sentence. Or is it like, okay, the feel of the kick drums through the PA? Or what is it for you?
That's a good question, man. That's a really good question. That's quite a tough one. I'd probably say it's the first thing that comes to my mind is that feeling of, you know, that rush of energy just before you go on, almost. Not necessarily in the gig whilst you're playing it. It's that those first couple of songs when you're still kind of getting comfortable, and the rush of like, don't fuck this up, Wilding. I think mixed with the kind of, you know, the band is loud and the stage is kind of vibrating, and I think it's more the feeling of that excitement and that kind of almost the anxiety of how about for you, like what was the big thing for you that you enjoyed?
For me it was actually the one moment when I sit down and do the counting in of the first song, and then, you know, actually, but I'm pretty sure you know this as well, when you start to play on stage, and it doesn't matter if it's like a huge open air show or just a regular club show, it doesn't matter how big the audience is. For me, it was always like this. When I started to count in, it was just me and the drums. It was like...
I know what you mean.
Like zoomed out, and I'm just doing what I love most. And I don't really need the crowd attention, or I don't need anyone to take a picture with me. I'm not that kind of guy. I'm just like... I'm a random dude and I really like to play. I love to play drums. And yeah. as soon as I have this first count in and I hear the snare through the PA, it's yeah. on, you know, I love, yeah, that's why yeah. I love blast beats. And yeah. That's why Belphegor was the perfect band for me back then, because it was just nonstop blasting. And I love it. So, and that was my happy place. On
yeah,
tour.
Absolutely. I'm assuming back then, you must have been doing some serious maintenance. To keep up with that stuff.
Yeah, actually, what I did is I did an extremely long warm up. It was always the same warm up, 45 minutes.
Wow.
And but it was like really simple. I started at 140 and played single strokes for 2 minutes straight.
Wow.
And I always had like my metronome and my stopwatch with me. And then it was a 30 second break, increased the tempo to 150 and so on till 200. And amazing. From there, it was like 5 BPM increments, so 200, 205, 210, 215, and so on. And at 245 or so, it was like, then I was like 40 minutes in to the warm-up. Wow. And then I switched it to 280, just like for 8 or 16 bars, to just like to
just
tell my...
little bursts.
Yeah. Yeah, like, and just to show myself that I can play faster than I need to play on stage. Mm. And then I know that I'm ready and I'm relaxed on stage, and then it's... and cool gig.
I guess because that's the thing, isn't it, that I've learned that over the years, that a warm-up should be a warm-up, like mm-hmm. you don't want to destroy yourself, because then, you know, by the third song you're done.
Yeah, you don't want that. Yeah. Yeah,
I've done it before where I've, you know, I've tried to do things I can't do in a warm-up, you know, I've tried to you know, I've been trying to put, this was years ago now, but, you know, pushing myself during the warm-up, and then I get on stage and it's third song and I'm like, oh shit, what's going on today? Like, I've got no energy. So, yeah.
But,
and I guess, as far as kind of these days practicing, is there anything that, aside from the brushes thing, are you a jazz fan, by the way? Is that why you like brushes?
Yeah, I kind of, you know, during the conservatory, I listened to jazz a lot. Mm. And there's one drummer, Jeff Hamilton, that I really love.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, so I'm really into him and his stuff. But other than that, it's like kind of listening. Yeah, a lot of metal, of course, but it's not really that much jazz. It's called like kind of the same records on repeat, like the standards. Miles Davis, Kind of Blue. Oh, Herbie Hancock, it's my guy, and that kind of stuff.
Oh, cool, man. No, that's cool. That, again, and it's nice that you've got something outside of metal as well that takes your interest. Yeah. Were you introduced to it at the conservatorium?
Yeah. Mm. That's where it all started. And my main issue back then was that I was always, you know, I'm not, as a metal drummer, I don't hit that hard, especially in comparison to guys like Kerim Krim.
Yeah.
Or Eloy Casagrande, those really hard.
I don't think anyone hits as hard as Eloy.
Yeah, okay. True. That's true. And so as metal drummer, I'm not hitting that hard, but in comparison to the jazz drummers, I was always way too loud.
Wow.
And the brushes were offered a solution for a guy like me to play jazz with an acceptable volume for this.
Without having to worry that you're just deafening everybody.
Yeah, and I was too loud as jazz drummer. So that was my way out, and now it's just like a perfect tool to be creative. Mm. That's why I use the brushes.
Do you have an acoustic kit as well then? I guess you must have
an acoustic kit.
You don't?
No. Wow. At the academy office, I got the drum tech kit, the big one with
that's awesome.
Kick drums. That's awesome. Drum tech, you know, they sent me that kick and it works just so well for like the video recording stuff for the teaching. Actually, for the teaching, when it comes to teaching drums, I think that electronic drum kits are even superior because, you know, it's not that loud. You can talk while you play. So you can transfer information and show it at the same time.
Absolutely. The sounds of it too. You don't need perfect microphone set up with millions of different interfaces and
That's it. And that's why I use the drum tech kit as teaching tool. Mm. Just like it works out so well. Mm. And other than that, with the brush playing, it's mostly like I got a snare drum here, but that's it.
Wow, that's cool.
And no, at the moment I don't have an acoustic kit, no.
Wow.
Hopefully, but I mean, one day again.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess, you know, at the moment, your priority is teaching. And as you said, electronic kits are almost superior in a lot of ways for that kind of thing. Do you miss an electronic? Do you miss an acoustic kit? A little bit. There is a different thing about it, isn't there? I can't put my finger on it, but there's definitely something. Maybe it's the response that you get when you hit it or something. Yeah. I don't know what it is.
I miss that. Like, you still got way more possibilities with an acoustic kit in comparison to the electronic. I miss that. But again, you know, even when it comes to practicing or maintenance of my skills, I prefer the electronic because of the volume. It's I don't really get fatigued physically, of course, but also like mentally, I don't get fatigued because it's not that loud.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm sure that's a big part of it, isn't it? Your brain's taking in all this loud noise as well. Mm-hmm. And that I'm sure your brain. I find that too, because I'm 90%. Electronic kit as well. Mm-hmm. But I've recently set up my acoustic kits right next to me over there.
Yeah.
And I can play on my electronic kit for an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. But I played on my acoustic kit for like 25 minutes and I was like, oh. Yeah. I don't know whether it's you want to hit harder or something when you play on an acoustic kit, or the response of it is different. But yeah, it was quite amazing. But I could totally understand that, the fatigue side of things. And I was talking to Alan from Black Dahlia on mm-hmm. whatever episode it was, third episode of this, I think.
Yeah.
And he was saying as well the fact that, especially with all the modern like Superior Drummer 3 and all that stuff, mm-hmm. you could have the best drum sound you've ever had directly in your ears without doing anything. Just pressing a button, basically.
That's true.
Nice.
Yeah, you know, when it comes to like, especially if you're switching between electronic and acoustic drums, there's just like one thing that's important to keep in mind, and that's that if you practice a lot on electronic drums like I do, one thing that's really important is that you are able to transfer everything that you can do on the electronic kit. You have to be able to perform and play the same stuff on the acoustic kit as
absolutely,
well.
Absolutely, yeah.
And if you got that down, then I think there's nothing wrong with using the e-kit as an effective practice tool, and which wastes less energy. But of course, you have, when you are playing on an acoustic kit, you have to sound good. So if you got that down, then it's good. If you don't got that down, then you got a problem.
That's a whole nother bit of practice that you need to do. On top of all the other practice that you already had. Yeah, exactly.
Oh yes,
it's just non-stop, isn't it? Why did we start all this?
I don't know.
I sometimes wish I had, you know, a slightly simpler life where I didn't love drums so much. All of my friends that aren't obsessed with an instrument, I'm sometimes a bit jealous.
Yeah. Or even if you choose another instrument, like let's say you choose guitar. Mm. The cool thing about guitar, or guitar is a perfect example of bass. You can take it with you.
Dude, that's as well. We have the most gear by a long way, especially as metal people. Two bass drums and fucking 25 cymbals.
Yeah, all that extra stuff.
And money and what are we doing? I've just realized I've kept you for an hour and 25 minutes already. So I don't want to keep you all day. I'm sure you've got a million things to do. So I was just curious. What with your relationship with social media and YouTube and stuff, because obviously for you especially, you know, that's been a massive tool in your success. Do you see it as a positive? Do you like the fact that you have to interact with it so much, or do you find that kind of a necessary evil for what you do?
The thing is, I don't have to do it. I think it's an incredible tool, but when it comes to the teaching platforms that I offer, I don't need to record new videos each week. So, and I had this before at certain points in my life, especially when like family related, when you don't have that much time or you're just not in the mood to be in front of the camera.
Yeah.
The first thing I always cut out are the social media videos. Yeah. I don't have to do that, you know. It's free information that I offer via YouTube, and I'm doing my best to post regularly. but I'm in the lucky position that I'm not a slave to that algorithm and have to post each week to get views. I don't care about the views because I got enough like students at the academy, more than enough, almost more than I can handle. And, you know, we got like new students in the online courses as well each day. And to keep my, like the companies running and working, I don't have to post regularly. And I see many drummers out there that started, and musicians that started this social media thing to get their name out there, and now they are kind of trapped.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And it becomes more like a day job. And I'm really happy that I don't have to record new videos. But when I'm in the mood and I'm feeling good, and then I'm recording videos, and then I enjoy it. But I don't have to like turn on the camera and like smile into the camera if I'm not in the mood to do so.
Then good morning, I just everybody, and then you just in your head you're thinking, "Fuck you, everybody."
Yeah.
No, I get that, man. I get that. Yeah, that's interesting, and it's I guess through the way that you've done it is a way that you've managed to be able to get to that point where you don't have to rely on social media and you don't have to rely on YouTube. And that must be quite a nice position to be in.
Yeah, it is. But one other thing that I would like to mention is when it comes to social media, it's an amazing tool to get your name out there, like to share your message.
For free, pretty much.
For free. For free. So it is awesome. One thing that's happening, like, I would call it recently, like the last 2 or 3 years, you know, in the beginning of, if you just focus on YouTube, in the beginning of YouTube, 2006 to 2010, in that time frame, it was enough to just post regular drum videos, like the no frills approach, a regular drum video.
Shitty camera,
and you're going to get a lot of views. And recently, you know, since so many like musicians or drummers posting videos and content, actually, like to really get attention there, you have to like either be unique or do something like super crazy or super special. And that makes it a bit difficult again. Let's call it like that. And I'm happy that I don't have to be a part of this kind of race for attention.
Yeah, it's the competitive thing again, almost, isn't it? It's kind of look at me.
look at me. Yeah, but that's what it is. Yeah, but one thing that's like really positive about that, you know, one recent example for the drumming community is a drummer from Spain. I'm sure you heard about him. His name is, what is his Insta name?
Oh, El Estepario Siberiano.
He's
amazing, man. Yeah.
One thing, you know, that people, you know, outstanding skills on a drum kit, of course, we don't have to talk about that.
Yeah.
An outstanding drummer, and he's funny. And one thing that I really like about him, he kind of has a certain edge to his appearance and the stuff he says. But you can 100% tell that this is not a show. This is not fake. That's him. That's how this guy is in private as well.
Absolutely.
And so actually he became successful by being himself. And that's what, in my opinion, also one of the keys to happiness. if you want to play that social media game and you want to be the, like if you want to be cool or you want to be like the fastest metal drummer, if that's not you and if that's not really what you want to do and you just do it for the clicks, then you are out, you're gonna have a miserable life ahead.
Again, you might not fail, but you're not gonna be happy.
You're gonna be happy, and that's failure in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it doesn't matter how much money you make at the end of the day. If you're wildly depressed, then you're not winning.
That's it. You know, so this would be like my go-to. If everyone who wants to like become famous on social media, try to become famous with something that you love to do and be yourself.
Absolutely. I think speaking of Eloy as well, I think he's a great example because like his videos, I mean, I watch all of his videos. I'm obsessed with him. He's incredible. But Eloy Casagrande, for anybody who doesn't know, Google him right now. But he just posts videos. I think it's iPhone. You know, he just his videos are done on iPhone, and he uses the Yamaha EAD10 to record, which is just you know, I'm sure you know it.
Yeah, I know it.
Two microphones, yeah. But it speaks to the fact that him and El Estepario, I don't know. Yeah. Obviously, I don't speak Spanish, but I think those two guys are so successful on social media and YouTube, and I think obviously they're both incredible drummers. But there's also a raw honesty to what they're giving. It's not this super polished, like 20 camera angles with color grading and all that stuff. It's just these dudes in a room playing drums. And I think there's almost a want for that now, I think, which is quite nice. I think people are kind of like, yeah, we've seen all those super, you know, super fake videos. It's nice to have honest people again, as you said. And I think hopefully that's the way that we can all move towards.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that, you know, also during the last couple of years, you know, it happened. I'm sure you saw these posts as well online about like, yeah, all the new drumming is fake and it all sounds the same. The success of guys like the two you just mentioned tells you that like edited drums or fake drums have not replaced those guys.
That's true. Yeah.
So, and
which is quite nice.
Which is, of course, it's awesome. Yeah. And it just tells you that everything is okay with like our music scene and
the metal drumming community.
And, you know, most of those negative posts, you know, and I know where they're coming from. You know, someone that spends his time complaining about others and like seeing all the stuff that's bad and that's going wrong about the metal community.
Yeah, exactly.
Most of them, and I say actually every one of those guys or girls, I don't know, is not really happy with their own life, or maybe they feel that they should get more attention.
Absolutely. And,
but actually the metal drumming community is alive and well, and guys like Eloy just show that.
Yeah, like, I think it's stronger than it's ever been as well, you know, with platforms like your platform as well, with the amount of students you have and the amount of interest I'm sure you still have on a day-to-day basis. I think it's probably as strong, if not stronger, than it's ever been. And it's kind of, but it's so easy, isn't it, to get kind of wrapped up in, especially now, and especially with social media, the negative headspace of, oh, everything's shit and everything's going to, you know. But, you know, especially like, you know, traditional media and stuff, everything's so revolved around trying to get attention for any reason, you know, the whole clickbait thing, isn't it? That it's just, it's really a big thing to try and remove yourself from that negative stuff and try and, instead of looking at all the negative, try and think of at least one or two positives of each situation, because there's always negatives. It's so easy to find negatives, but to find positives it's almost a challenge sometimes. So I think it's quite a nice challenge.
You need a kind of a filter
and exactly
get away of this negative. And one thing that I did for my social media channels like YouTube, Facebook and Insta is that, you know, when I release a new YouTube video, then right after I release it, I'm like, I'm online for 30 minutes, maybe 60 minutes. And I'm reading the comments, the first couple of comments that get posted in the first hour. And the reason is I want feedback on the video, if it was useful, helpful, because I have to develop my skills.
Of course, you're learning. Feedback. Yeah.
That's like market research for free, which is awesome.
That's true. Yeah.
And I do that. But after that, we got another worker employee Ollie. Some of you might heard his name already. Ollie Ollie is answering all of my emails. Ollie is the one that takes care of the comments, and I don't get any of the negativity because I don't have time for that, and I don't want it actually. So I don't, at one point I don't read comments anymore, and the only way to interact with me personally is either write a comment in the first 30 to 60 minutes when a new YouTube video is released.
Yeah.
Or you join the Drum Technique Academy.
Yeah.
Because you cannot reach me via email. He's doing all of the email stuff.
Yeah.
No chance. I'm not reading emails.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I got way too many students, and those are the ones that like, they ask for my attention. They like, we got this payment wall.
Yeah, of course.
Let's call it like that. and they pay for that. And all of my time is dedicated to those students. And the free content, it's online. You can take it or leave it. Or you can also hate on it
as well, dude. That thing is free. Like, I mean, if you don't like it, just move on. Like, stop complaining. Yeah. It's free.
And also, if you don't like it, I'm not going to hear any of that negativity because that's it's not going to get through my filter.
That's a really good way of doing it, I think. And that's a good way to keep yourself sane, I think, as well.
Yeah.
And awesome. to keep yourself doing this, because I think if it was just, again, YouTube can be so savage that I think, you know, it's a large reason why, I mean, I'm not really that massively interested in doing the YouTube thing. But also I've seen how, you know, even, you know, I don't really read comments, but people like yourself and friends like Krim and stuff, they've told me like the amount of comments they've had before where it's just been so, and Dan Presland, funnily enough, we were talking about it, just how horrible people can be. And I'm just like, fuck that. I don't need that shit.
Yeah. But again, you know, if you come from a, like this place of, okay, I want to help others, I want to share some free knowledge. Not everyone has to love me. Not everyone.
Yeah,
I'm going to say it publicly. You don't have to love Martin Jovanovic. It's okay. I'm a random dude. I play drums and I record videos, and I don't like get in touch with the negativity at all. And one other thing is, you know, this has happened like not really that much on YouTube, but a lot on Facebook, closed Facebook groups. You know, people that don't like me, that's kind of funny. I'm like, you know, let's call it a cool situation right now, because I don't get any of the negativity, because like Oli takes care of that, or we don't read the comments at one point anymore. So I don't get in touch with that. And if someone spends time like either hating on me or like with all their negative comments, what they do is basically they share my name out there
for free.
For free. Then people come to my YouTube channel or to my Facebook channel and check out my videos. And a funny side note, and I see this happen over and over again, that students, now students, they first found out about me because someone was either saying something like
talking shit,
like, yeah, that's the guy with the online courses, or like the video that 666 Samus recorded about me. With that video. And you know, those guys and girls that watch this video, they then like, okay, there's this guy in Austria with this funny accent who teaches drums. Then they go to my YouTube channel
and they're like, oh, this is actually really good.
And then they sign up for the academy. Like,
that is, you know, perfect.
Actually,
so you're still winning.
Like, you know, as a final conclusion, if you are positive and if you stay positive and have like the right mindset and the right attitude, and like my main goal is to like share some of that stuff for free. Other stuff is in the academy and it helps others, otherwise it wouldn't work. Then I'm fine. Then it's a good day once again. And
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's why I'm just like a happy, relaxed human being.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, yeah, there's a lot to be said for being selfless. Is almost, there's a thing about being selfless that helps you more than not being selfless, being selfish, if you know what I mean. Helping others makes you feel better than not helping others. I think we've seen that a million times, haven't we? Some of the grumpiest, saddest people are the ones that are really rich, that just sit in their mansions with no, you know, they don't help anyone, they don't see anyone.
And that's failure again.
Yeah, absolutely. No matter how big your house is, I completely agree.
Yeah.
Right, yes. So, and I've kept you forever. I know you've got a lot to do. I like to do these. I don't know if you've listened to the podcast before, but I like to do these little quizzes at the end. So I'll get through this as quick as I can so that you can
get
back to your day. Cool. Right. So it's the either or quiz. So I'll give you two things and you just have to tell me which one you prefer of each of the two things.
Yep. Cool.
Right. So I'll start with general lifestyle ones. Cool. So coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Yeah. 100%. No tea.
Yep. Yeah,
okay, fair. I like that. Summer or winter?
Summer.
Yeah?
Definitely.
You like the sunshine. Right, beach or countryside?
Beach.
Yeah. I guess that goes with summer, right? The sitting on the beach, having a pina colada.
Yeah, That's it. Oh, yeah.
Cool. Right. Are you a morning or evening person?
Morning. Definitely morning. Yeah.
Are you an early riser?
Not at the moment, but like last year when COVID hit, it was like around 5 a.m. in the morning.
Nice.
So really early.
Respect.
But now it's like 6:30. But like the, you know, my most important like work hours is like in the morning when I'm at the academy office, because I live close by. Actually, I can walk. Oh, it's walking distance to my office.
That's great.
And when I'm here at 7, you know, usually I work till maybe 10 or maybe 11. Yeah. And then I'm done.
Yeah, that's amazing, dude. That's so cool. But that's what happens when you wake up early, right? I always find that if you if you get up early and smash stuff out in the morning, then you can just kind of chill. You know, well, not chill, but you know, you can do things that aren't work related for the rest of the day, which is nice.
But that's it. Yeah. A short book tip here, book recommendation: Eat That Frog by Brian. I think it was Brian Tracy.
Eat That Frog.
Yeah. It's about like doing the one thing that you dislike the most, but is the most important point of the day. Do it first in the morning and you're done. You're already winning.
Oh yeah, man. Respect. There's a big mental thing to that, isn't there? Getting something done that you didn't want to do. Yeah, totally. Yep. I agree with that. I get up at around, well, what time is up today? I get up around 5:30, but that's because I have young children. I don't want to get up at 5. but anyway.
Are your kids waking up at 5:30 or 6 or?
Yeah, well, my youngest has never been, he's 2 now. He's never been a good sleeper. Mm-hmm. So and he sleeps through the night now, but he wakes up at anywhere between 5 and 5:30 still. My oldest, who's 4, he's always been a good sleeper, and he wakes up at about 7:30. So which I know is great.
That's awesome. Yeah.
But and he goes to bed at like 7, so he sleeps for about 12.5 hours. It's great. But my youngest, he goes to sleep 7:30, wakes up about 5. So so it's good fun. It's but again, it's funny because me and my wife kind of we take it in turns sometimes. So I'll do a couple of days where I get up early, and then she has a couple of days where she gets up early. But on the days when we don't get up early, we always feel a bit like, oh, because we haven't had those extra hour or two to wake up. So and obviously we have to get up, get the kids ready, get them to childcare, and blah blah blah.
Yeah.
So it's almost nicer to wake up at 5:30, even though that first half hour is kind of like, oh God. But then, you know, you feel much more prepared for the day then. And I really actually enjoy getting up early these days.
That's true.
Which is crazy because, you know, 5 or 10 years ago, I would have been like, 5:30 in the morning. What's wrong with you?
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Early mornings. Anyway, sorry. I keep getting distracted. Right. So morning, evening, we've done that one. Okay. Meat or vegetables?
Am I allowed to say both?
You can say, I will allow that, yes.
Yeah, it's definitely. Actually, okay. It's those two, you know, my diet is pretty easy. Mm. In the morning, actually, do you know Jesse Itzler?
Yeah, man, yeah. I know that book that he did with, I only know him because of the David Goggins book.
Living with the Seal.
That is a great book, dude. I love that.
It's so funny. And and from him, I got this idea, this fruit till noon.
Oh, yeah. So,
right now, actually, I'm only like, I'm drinking shakes.
Yeah.
Fruit shakes. And I got the Vitamix, the huge blender. And so fruit till noon, and afternoon and evening, it's just meat and vegetables. That's all I eat.
Okay. So you're not a kind of sugary snacks guy?
No. No, because actually, I think I'm just getting old. But like, if my diet is bad, and with bad I mean like, yeah, all of that sweet stuff, the chocolate, and all of
the good stuff.
Actually, I get tired, and you know, I also need a lot of sleep. So I need like 8 to 9 hours per night.
Yeah,
and then I want to be awake during daytime, and I hate it to be tired. Really, I hate that feeling.
Sluggish, groggy, kind of, it's sucks,
terrible. Yeah. Really, that's bad. Yeah. Don't like it at all. And when I changed my diet to this kind of diet, this works really well for me, and I'm feeling energized throughout the day without being too tired even after meals. You know, I don't eat huge meals, but I eat like meat or fish 2 to 3 times per day. Yeah. Small portions with vegetables, and that's what I do.
That's good, man. Again, it's the maturity thing, isn't it? It's growing up and, yeah, and realizing that you can't just eat pizza all day.
No, I can't.
It sucks.
If I eat a pizza right now, then I can go to sleep right now as
Yeah, dude. Yeah, like, last night we had some kind of, what was it? Our kids love wraps, you know, like tortilla wraps. And it was like some beef mince with vegetables and stuff. But I had a huge one. And again, after I ate it, it was about 6 p.m. And I just thought, oh, I need to sleep.
Oh, man.
So yeah, it doesn't happen that much anymore. But when you have those kind of meals, it totally just takes it out of you, doesn't it?
True. But by the way, how old are you?
I've forgotten. 32.
32, okay.
Yeah, so we're similar age.
Yeah.
You say you're 34?
34, yeah.
Yeah, cool.
34. And family already as well. I really like that.
Yeah. Oh, have you got a family?
Not yet.
Not yet.
I'm working on it at the moment. And actually, I hope that my one of my kids is going to be a daughter. I want a daughter.
Yeah.
And I hope that she's interested in drums.
Yeah, we almost hope for that as parents, don't we?
Yes.
And I'm definitely pushing both of my set. My oldest used to love it, and now he's kind of like, yeah, I don't care anymore.
Okay.
So hopefully he'll come back to it. But my youngest he's obsessed with it. He always wants to come in the garage and hit. I guess it's, you know, they just get to hit stuff, which is cool. Yeah. They're not normally allowed to hit stuff in normal life, so.
But that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, that's cool, man. I hope I hope that works out for you.
Yeah.
Obviously a daughter or a son will be great, but as long as they're a drummer, that's perfect.
Yeah, as long as they're a drummer. That's true.
Right, yes, sorry. We keep getting distracted, don't we? We could talk for hours. Right, even though we've just said that you're not really a snacky guy, if you were to have a snack, would it be chips or chocolate?
Chocolate.
Yeah, respect. Most people I've had on here, Dan was last week, not last week, 2 weeks ago. Adrian was the same. I think Krim was the same. I think Alan was the same.
Yeah.
I didn't, they all said chips. And I was like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Really, chips?
Yeah, no. I know. Yeah, I mean, you know, I like chips, don't get me wrong. Or crisps, as we call them in the UK. But, you know. Chocolate, man. Chocolate all the way.
Yeah.
And it's just been Easter, so there's lots of chocolate left over in our house.
Oh, yeah.
Which is bad. the next one, you probably don't have either of these, but Coke or Pepsi?
If I... actually, I would... I don't really drink it regularly, but it would be Coke.
Yeah.
Coke, yeah.
The original. Yeah.
Yeah.
Respect. Cool. So, gym or couch?
A gym, yeah.
Yeah. Are you a gym goer?
Not now,
I guess.
Now they're all closed. But what I did, I don't know if you... I cannot move the camera right here, but wait, I can't. So without...
without destroying your studio.
I got a power rack.
Oh, wow.
You see this?
Fucking hell, yeah, nice. You know,
I bought this, you know, when they announced the second lockdown in Austria.
Yeah.
I just bought like some dumbbells, barbell, and a power rack to do squats and deadlifts and some bumper plates.
Wow. And
yeah. Now I train here. That's also cool because if I'm working in the morning and doing all of the stuff I have to do, afternoon is just brush playing and working out here.
That's nice.
And then I'm going home.
That is nice. Living the dream,
the good
dude.
Life.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Respect. Respect. That's awesome. Cool, right, Jim. YouTube or Netflix? That's a tough one.
Wow, that's difficult. Let me think. Yeah, it depends. You know, when I'm at work, it's YouTube. And when I'm at home, it's definitely Netflix.
So are you going to have to go in the middle again? So both.
Okay, so yeah, it would be both, yeah.
Yeah, both. Okay, cool. Instagram or Facebook? The ultimate showdown.
Wow, okay. But those two are for me almost the same thing.
Okay, interesting.
None of these two in my private life. It's only about when it comes to like the teaching platforms, They are both really successful and working well for us. But private, I'm not active on either one of those two.
Okay. So both, but only for in a professional sense. Yeah, or none, actually.
Yeah. It's business media for me, not social media.
I respect that. Right, then I've got a couple of drum ones. Double pedal or two single pedals?
Wow.
Because I've seen
you use
both. I'm
going to go for a double pedal.
Ooh.
Yeah, I use both, but I'm going to go for double pedal.
Nice.
That also has a lot to do with lifestyle choices, because I'm planning on, you know, when COVID is over, hopefully this year, next year, I'm still thinking about, I don't want to really move out of Vienna, but I want to be more mobile and like check out different places. And I need a practice setup that I can take with me anywhere. And then it's definitely double pedal.
Yeah. I completely respect that. Yeah, it's a lot more it's a lot more useful across the board, I think, isn't it?
Yes, that's true. And
especially touring
just...
and stuff too, man. Like two kick drums. I don't know how these guys do it all the time with two kick drums. Like fucking hell.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
lugging that around everywhere. Respect. Cool. 5A's or 2B's?
2B.
Yeah, I thought you were a big 2B. Stick guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
Do you find for faster stuff, it's, I wouldn't say easier, but the stick gives you more back?
Yeah, it does. But I definitely prefer them when it comes to teaching, because it's easier to train a certain motion with a heavier drumstick and bigger drumstick than with a 7A, for example.
That makes a lot of sense.
That's why I always go for the bigger stuff like 2B or... like the Thomas Lang Vic Firth signature stick works
huge.
Out well. Yeah. And also the Corpse Master of Vic Firth. I really like those as well. Like heavy, big sticks.
That makes a lot of sense with the teaching thing, especially for technique. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can really exaggerate a technique probably a bit more with a 2B.
Definitely.
Yeah. Cool. So this one is often controversial. Blast or groove?
Right now it's groove. Yeah, it's groove drumming. Back in the days, it was only blast beats.
Yeah, that is literally what everybody has said so far.
Yeah.
I think we're all getting older, old, man. Yeah, exactly.
But actually, if I would be like focusing on getting back on tour as a metal drummer, I would focus on blast beats again.
Yeah.
So then they would be like more on the forefront. But right now, with the brush playing especially.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, totally understand moves, that, man. Yeah. Right, so triggers or mics? And again, it can be a mixture of the two, because a lot of people have said triggers on the kicks and then obviously a natural on top. But it can be the sound, it can be playing with triggers versus playing with mics.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Just in general.
They are all talking from a live perspective.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I'm going to take the teacher perspective and the metal context. And in this context, especially if you focus on the faster stuff, I would definitely go for triggers, because you hear every little mistake, every inconsistency. And for the faster stuff, you're going to need triggers anyways. So I don't know why there's still this discussion about the triggers, you know.
I know.
No one out there plays at 280 BPM without... maybe someone is out there playing without triggers at 280, but no one can hear him. So
yeah, I was going to say.
I still haven't heard about that guy yet. So.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, I remember a very specific story, because when I used to play for Trigger the Bloodshed, which were, you know, stupidly fast, and we toured with a band called Bleed From Within, who Ali Richardson is an incredible drummer, but it's a lot slower, you know, kind of more groovy, kind of Lamb of God-y kind of tempos. And he didn't use triggers, and he's super hard hitter. And, you know, I remember talking about it with our sound guy. I was like, do you think I could get away without using triggers in Trigger the Bloodshed? And And he was like, yeah. I'm almost 100% sure that you need triggers, but let's check it in sound check. And we did one sound check and he just came up to me and he was like, absolutely no way. Like, you need triggers. 100% you need triggers. Because in the fast bits, it was just...
Yeah,
you know, it's that type of music. You just can't do it without triggers. It needs to be there. It's part of the sound, I think.
That's it. Yeah, one possibility would be, you know, one thing that everyone almost seems to do is when they are using triggers, that they are still like they are hitting hard at the slow tempos and they're hitting soft at high tempos. Mm. And you can like compress that yourself a little bit by hitting less hard at the slower stuff.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then it would maybe be possible, but still all but those still, extra yeah. stress and
Exactly. And again, even when you get to 280, if you're or even 260, if you're the most consistent dynamic drummer on the planet, it's still going to be tough. It's still yeah. gonna be really yeah. tough. So just use triggers, people. Stop yeah. hating on triggers. Triggers are great. Cool, right. Okay, so this is actually a three. Mm-hmm. It's direct drive, belt, or chain. I know you use the eliminators, but is that something that are they belt, right? Are they the belt ones?
It's a belt. Yeah. Belt drive,
is,
yeah.
Is that your across the board preference or is that just kind of a specific
no? Again, you know, everything I do like comes from the teacher perspective.
And yeah.
Back in the days, I used mainly Axis pedals and mm-hmm. then also the Charge Copito and the P16 pedal of Schoßleitner Technologies.
Yeah.
But the big problem here is that when you're teaching, you know, not every student has the budget to buy an
1,000 euro Axis, pedals.
1,000 euro pedal, yeah, or even yeah. more than that. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so it was important for me to showcase that it doesn't really matter. And all of those mid-price range pedals work fine as well. And also actually the lower price range pedals work good as well. Mm. So, and that's why I went for the Pearl Eliminator with the belt drive.
Yeah.
You know, I really like those. And yeah, so that's the main reason. I don't think that there's such a big difference when it comes to chain and belt drive, actually. Mm. Mm. Almost quite the same. And with direct drive, of course, there's a different feel there and yeah. different advantages or disadvantages, but still, yeah, it's just a pedal.
Yeah, exactly.
For me, right now, it would be a belt drive, but actually, I don't care.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Whatever feels okay.
Whatever feels okay. Yeah, yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Actually, you know, every direct drive pedal on the market that I have tried so far, they all felt good as well, but you need, like, when it comes to direct drive, especially when you're a beginner, you kind of need certain settings that kind of help you develop your skills. Mm. And with direct drive pedals, I see that quite often, that especially beginners, because they see other drummers using direct drive pedals, that beginners go for direct drive pedals with extreme settings, like yeah. maxed out spring tension and like extreme beta swing. And then they're not able to play at all. And I wouldn't recommend that.
Mm. Yeah, totally. Yeah. I think there's a real obsession with, well, I guess it's influence, isn't it? People see the drummers doing things they want to do and they feel, oh, to do that, I need to have what they've got. But I think probably, I assume, mm-hmm. in the same way that a 2B is very helpful for technique, probably a chain drive pedal or a belt drive pedal is probably equally as helpful because it's heavier. There's more swing to it. You can kind of, mm-hmm. You can overly accentuate the technique as opposed to a super, super fast direct drive pedal where you don't even know what's happening. It's so quick.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. You know, especially like the first direct drive pedal I ever owned was Axis. First, it was short boards, A short boards, and then I had the A long boards. And those are, you know, the Axis pedals work great, but you don't get a lot of feedback from the pedal itself because it has such a light feel. And one thing, and also, you know, when I have one-on-one coaching students here at the academy office in Vienna, they always bring their own pedals. And when they bring Axis pedals or direct drive pedals in general, one thing that we started to use beta weights. So like really heavy, like... Those are like specially made. Like we're gonna start to offer them in the Drum Nerd shop as well next month.
Awesome.
Those are like extremely heavy because they help you to slow down the pedal, and the pedal itself gives you more feedback to actually teach your foot how this kind of fast motion feels, and you get more feedback and you learn it way more quickly. And so, but yeah, I agree as well. If you don't have beta weights, a regular belt drive or chain drive is going to help you like learn that stuff a bit quicker and like understand the basic motions, let's call it like that. Yeah.
And I guess most of the guys that have ended up on direct drive pedals, I assume, probably started out on belt and chain, and that's where that's where they built their kind of motion and their technique, and then moved on to the super quick stuff. Right, cool. So last thing, and then I will let you go, honestly I will, is I like to do a top three. I'd like to do a different top three every week. So for you, top three bits of advice that you would give to someone getting into extreme drumming, like a beginner, just basic advice, nothing that you wouldn't charge for. Because, you know, that's what your website's for. I'll put all that information in the show notes. But just three bits of basic advice that you could, that you'd like to give to people. You've probably already given them so much on this podcast, but.
Like we're talking about then a complete beginner.
Yeah. Someone who maybe someone who can play drums but really wants to get into, you know, the extreme side of drumming.
Okay. The first tip is to listen to a lot of music and find out exactly, also in the metal genre, find out the one subgenre that you love most. Like identifying your big goal. Because like if you are a death metal drummer, like just let's take the two big ones, black and death metal. A good death metal drummer needs different skills than a good black metal drummer.
100%, so, yeah.
Let's say if you go for extreme death metal and you're like, I'm a big fan of Trey Williams of Dying Fetus. He needs different stuff than someone that plays drums for Belphegor, for example. So at first I would identify what you need to work on, and like you need to identify your end goal. And now let's say, okay, Dying Fetus is your end goal. Then we got we got basically everything in there.
From groove, speed.
double bass has to be tight. Your hands have to be fast as well and tight. So at first, identify what you want. At second, you know, you're going to listen to that music. Second would be get the basic drum gear that you need. So if you go for death metal, you're going to need at least a double pedal or two singles. So you need kind of the equipment to start working on your skills. This would be like the second tip. And most of your listeners, I'm pretty sure, got the first two topics covered already, so which is good. So success.
Hopefully, yeah.
And the third advice that I would give if it comes to learning new music is to identify the one song that like that's like the perfect blueprint for that sub-genre. For me, I can speak from experience here. It was the Belphegor song Lucifer Ancestors. Yeah. I was a fan of the band before I joined the band. I wanted to be in that band. And this was the, back in the days, this was their hardest song. Yeah. It was full of blast beats and triplet double bass in between. So, and those were my two main focus points. And my advice for everyone listening who's at this point in time, if you identify that one song, then slow it down to a tempo where it's so slow that you can play each song part perfectly. And for me with Belphegor, that song, I started at 160 beats per minute. The original song is at 260. So 100 BPM slower. And I learned the full song, and it was just my goal to get through the song perfectly, you know, with tight blast beats, double bass has to be on time. The fills, you know, not many fills in that song, I think like two drum fills, but they have to be perfectly in time as well. Yeah. And once you got that down, then you got basically the foundation already. And all you have to do from there is increase the tempo constantly, and until you get to that one final tempo where you play that one song perfectly fine. And actually, you know, when it comes to, if we stick to the Lucifer Ancestors example, Actually, that was my endurance blast beat preparation for Belphegor. I just practiced that one song. I started extremely slow. I repeated that one over and over again until I got it down at 260, and then I was ready for the audition.
And without even realizing, you had like the most intense kind of blast beat workout without, you know, inside a song.
Inside this one song, But that's it, And actually, it's such an easy formula because I still remember then when I was able to play it at 160, then my practice routine was to play it at 160 and increase the tempo to 165 and just like push myself a little bit out of my comfort zone. And all I did was like play the same song two or three times at that slow tempo. And yeah, and then I just worked my way up and it was like no rocket science, no, like nothing else, just like the passion for that music, for that one song. And then I just like it all went, it worked out well from there.
From that point on for me. Absolutely. So. And then, wow, quite literally, we've come full circle. The rest is history from that. From that 160 for that song to 260 Belphegor, and then now, the legendary Martin. But no, man, that's incredible. Thank you so much for that. That's there's a lot of advice in there for everybody and some cool stories, I would say.
Thank you.
No, that was a lot of fun, man. Thank you so much for joining me and thank you so much for taking your time out. Your very busy schedule.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. I think it's great that you're offering this kind of like platform for extreme metal drummers. And, you know, I really like that you are focusing on also stories and like sharing that knowledge in the form of stories and in the form of a podcast is amazing.
Oh, thank you, man. Thank you so much.
You're doing something great here. So awesome.
Obviously, and same to you. Thank you for, and thank you for being a part of this. I think this one's going to be a big one for a lot of people to learn specific stuff, I think. So, rad. We'll keep in touch and speak again soon.
Perfect.
Awesome.
Dan, thank you very much. Have a great day and cheers to the UK from Vienna.
Thanks, dude.
Bye-bye.